It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Happy to have you along for the ride as part of our Football Monday here on WGR, brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. I am the Bulldog. Mike Shope is out sick today. Joining me now on the Wester Hotline is our main dude, Sal Capaccio, fresh. I say fresh. I don't know how fresh you are. What was the travel back from Seattle like?
Well, first of all, I want to say happy Sports Equinox Day. I did not want to forget that to say to you. I had never heard of it until I learned of it today, to be quite honest with you. But Zach knows what it is. Do you know what it is?
It is every major sport, every major team sport is playing tonight.
That is right. And I guess I'm just the one that's out of touch here. I'd never heard of that before.
I think I heard it, maybe a year, maybe last year at this time with the World Series going on. Maybe I know I've heard it before. So, yes.
NFL, NMLB, NBA, NHL, and MLS. This is the 31st equinox in sports history, according to Stathead. That's what they wrote. So, pretty cool. Travel was good last night, obviously. It's a long flight back, but makes it a lot better on everybody. I think you feel better. You know, that like we talked about last week. Oh, my God, what's going to be like tomorrow on the radio, you know, if they lose this game. And, you know, but it makes it a lot easier to know that the waters will be a lot calmer and people feel a lot better about their football team, as I know you have been talking about today. Got in late last night. Plane landed at around 2 a.m., I'd say, and then back at it this morning to kind of digest it all.
All right, so the scene in Seattle, how much? I know you're running around. I've said a few times, like, you know, we're getting ready and starting our post-game coverage. I usually don't get to watch Fox or CBS or anybody really do the on-field stuff that's after. But as our post-game show was going on, I started seeing images from the stadium. And so it was just so cool. Like Seattle, it just feels like not a place I would expect thousands of Bills fans to show up. Not only did they show up, they stayed there through the rain and were like all sort of gathered behind the Bills bench. I just thought it's not the first time we've ever seen it, of course. We know this fan base travels, but it really resonated with me yesterday for some reason. I'm not sure why, just because I think it was unexpected for me to see that many people in Seattle.
It was very cool, very cool. When the schedule came out, you know, back in May, we do our whole thing of, you know, talking about the games and the cities. And, you know, you do that at the end of the previous season anyway. Like, oh, the Bills are going here next year, there next year. We knew the Bills were going to Seattle for several months. And, I mean, people would tell me all the time, oh, Seattle, I really want to go to Seattle. Destination, it's what we call a destination city, right, to travel to. It's Houston, Seattle, and L.A. might be the three this year that you don't normally go to. Miami pretty much is always on that list. And I heard from a lot of people that talked about Seattle, media members. There are several media members, including my co-host on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo, Matt Bove, who went out early with their family. He went out with his wife just to spend a little extra time. So, you know, people, I think just it's an opportunity to go see your favorite football team play in a city they don't normally always travel to and in a beautiful part of the country. So it all made sense. And of course, makes it a lot better when the Bills are good and you think, okay, they have a chance to win this game. Let's go root for your team. During the game itself, I mean, look, I remember the Monday night game in 2016 and just being blown away, like just the atmosphere there. It's great. It's very similar to Buffalo when the team is rocking and rolling, it gets very loud. It is, I'll be honest, it wasn't as intimidating, but that might be because there were more Bills fans, you know, than before. But also, I mean, this is not the same mid-2010s Seahawks team, right? That was the Legion of Boom and they were going to punish you and they were winning a Super Bowl and all that kind of stuff. At the end of the game, I always try to take that video, you know, of fans who come down by the wall, and I show what it's like, Bills Mafia taking over a stadium. And yeah, Bulldog, I was blown away too. It was awesome. I was blown away early in the game. Like, before the game started, the number of people that were already there behind the Bills bench, and it was just super cool. And the Bills themselves really, I think, relished in it towards the end of the game and getting the fans hooting and hollering. It was a super cool scene.
I mean, for some reason, I just can't get enough of it. I know it's not unprecedented. It happens, you know, with regularity. You see it all the time. I've seen these videos you're talking about. It just really impressed me that so many folks turned out. And what a reward they got, right? I mean, the weather wasn't great, but right from the start of the game, it was just the Bills game.
The weather was actually kind of great for about 25% of the game. And then it just kept going off and on. And I would say for about 25% of the game, it was pretty bad. And 50% of the game was kind of just okay. So we got kind of got a little bit of everything in Seattle. A lot of hard rain at some point. But we got a lot of sunshine, too, during the game. It was kind of off and on. And, of course, just complete domination by the Buffalo Bills on the field. I mean, really, I would say Bulldog from just maybe for about, maybe a 6-7 maybe 10-minute top stretch of the second quarter, the Bills just controlled this game throughout. There was no doubt. I mean, they just went down the field and scored. They never didn't have the lead. But that little time in the second quarter when the Seahawks drove down and they scored, they had a field goal, but then they got the ball right back. The Bills stopped them a couple times right there at the goal line, as you know. I think that was really the only time where it got a little bit dicey. Other than that, the Bills really just controlled this game from start to finish.
So how did they do it? I've been talking a lot about Keon Coleman today, not surprisingly, the offensive line. How about the defense for a change? Let's spend a few minutes on the defense, because I was worried about the middle of the field against this team. I was worried about this team, even though they don't run it a lot. I think Kenneth Walker III is an excellent back, and I was worried about them sort of smacking the Bills around a little bit, and the Bills just throttled them.
I really loved our Zoom session we just had with Bobby Babich. Literally, I just got off it 2 minutes before I came on with you. And I just think when you hear a guy like Bobby Babich talking, Bobby's great with the media, and he gives you more than your average coach, right? He's just really insightful, and he's kind of willing to share a little bit more. You learn a lot. And I just think you understand coming away how much coaching matters and how much they really put into these game plans and the detail. And he said to us straight out just a half hour ago, he said, it started with them with stopping Walker and Charbonneau this week. He said that was their focus all week. It's what they talked about all week. Their philosophy on defense was stopping them, and they wanted to make sure. And they did it. I mean, those guys, they had 1 yard rushing, I think, in the first half. I have to go back and look, but either way, it's like less than 5 yards, I think, right, because of that long, the one that went over the head and all that, that counted. But at the end of the day, they had 32 yards rushing and ran for less than 2 yards a carry. Now, this is backed up by a really nice performance last week on the ground against Tony Pollard and the Tennessee Titans, but that's really where it started. It started with the fact that the Seahawks just couldn't run the ball. Now, the Seahawks don't normally run the ball a lot anyway. They're actually the most pass-heavy team in the league. But then once they got down a little bit, you made them one-dimensional. It just didn't matter after that. But that's where it starts. And I agree with you about, being a little bit worried about Bale and Spector. Look, I mean, the one area where the Seahawks did gain a little bit of ground and what teams have done to the Bills this year is throwing to running backs out of the backfield. That's an area the Bills have been susceptible all season. The Seahawks did that. But remember what I told you last week? I said, I really expect them to have a carbon copy of the Titans game plan early in the game, right? Rollouts, quick game, get to the tight ends, get to the running backs. What was the first play of the game? Roll out, try to get to the tight end. And what did Greg Rousseau do? Batted it down, right? I mean, this was the game plan. Once you stop, once they realized that's not really going to work today, they had no answers. They had no DK Metcalf was out, which is a huge factor. I'm watching all 22, and the Seahawks, media content people are putting out the all 22 today, what they're talking about. And you know what it is? It's so ironic. They're like, yeah, the Seahawks receivers couldn't get any separation against the Bills.
Love to hear it. And speaking of swing passes to the running backs, was it the second possession or was it the first? I'm trying to remember Taron Johnson on Walker III in the open field was just like that. That's a play that could really get a team going. And it was like a 1 yard gain, I think.
He's such a difference maker. He really is. And remember what we talked about when he was out. And I love Cam Lewis. I talk about him all the time, but I'll be the first to tell you, he's not Taron Johnson. I mean, he's more limited. Taron Johnson is an all-pro football player. You just can't replace him like that. But what Taron Johnson does by being active is now he allows everyone to play their spots even a little bit differently, a little bit better. They fit into their roles a little bit. Cam Lewis then becomes the dime defender, which, by the way, they played 40% dime defense yesterday, right? Which those guys had to step up. So Taron Johnson in his role, he's not just a great cover nickel corner. As Bobby Babich, again referring to him in that Zoom call a little while ago, said in this Zoom call, he said 3 times, he's a dog. He's just a dog. He said he's watching film on the way home, and he just kept thinking, oh, my God, this guy's just a dog. And the way he goes at it, He said he's very intentional about how great he wants to be and what he does to prepare. And I would add Rasul Douglas in there, Bulldog. How many of those tackles have we seen Rasul Douglas make this year? Like we saw very early in the game. Rasul Douglas has just become he's not just so smart at jumping the route, like we know that. He's now jumping the runs and he's and the short passes and making the tackles very physically, and that's just helped so much with this defense.
Sal Capaccio on the West here hotline, fresh off a trip to Seattle where the Bills dominated the Seahawks 31-10 to improve to 6-2 on the season. The Bills will host Miami next Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. at Highmark Stadium. How about Gregory Rousseau, Sal? Like, it's another one of these games where, like, the sack numbers aren't there, but holy cow, he was a force up there. I mean, he had a favorable matchup. I don't know if that they're into a third string right tackle there or wherever they were on their depth chart. But credit to Rousseau, man. Like you mentioned, the pass batted down. He batted another one down and was just kind of a menace.
Yeah, the very first play of the game, to reference that again, they tried to use Greg Rousseau's athleticism kind of against him. They ran play action hoping he would just crash down. Juices are flowing, adrenaline. I want to make a play. I'm going to see play action. I'm going to bite. I'm going to go down the line. Greg Rousseau just said, I'm not doing that. I'm being patient. He's going to do exactly what he's supposed to do. He set the edge. He waited. He saw the ball didn't go there. He stands right in the passing lane and goes after Geno Smith, right? Right there, you know, it's going to kind of be a long day for that right tackle because Greg Rousseau had a great matchup, as you said. He on the right tackle, Michael Jarrell, went to Finlay College, right? I mean, he's in his second start ever. That's, you know, an FCS school. And you knew that that was going to be a matchup the Bills could exploit. They did. Greg Rousseau took advantage of it. Yes, he is having, to me, at least a Pro Bowl type season, if not beyond. I mean, he doesn't have the sack numbers, so I doubt he'll be an All-Pro at the end of the year. Usually you got to have those that come with it. But he's making things happen every single time. You know, it's like you just, when you have guys out there who are impacting the game in ways that, you know, aren't showing up in the stat sheet, you know, they have to be recognized for everybody else being able to then show up on the stat sheet. And that's really what happened yesterday. He's impacted the game. He didn't have six quarterback hits like he did against the Tennessee Titans, but he had one, and he had two tackles for loss, and he had two passes broken up, all, by the way, on the first three plays of the game.
Right. Let's swing it around to the other side of the ball here. Keon Coleman, Sal. We'll get to Shakir, but Coleman, I feel like, the development, just how impressed are you with Coleman at this stage?
I'm most impressed with how quickly he's developing on a week-to-week basis, right? Like, let's go back to training camp. And I would come on with you every day, and I'd say the same thing about Keon Coleman almost every day, Bulldog, if you remember. I'd say, Bulldog, every day he makes a highlight reel catch. Now, he's not catching 10 balls and, you know, wowing you on a play-to-play basis, but he makes one play every game, every practice where you're like, okay, that's why they drafted him. You got to get that one play out of him a game. His length to go over the top, his body balance, his balance when he catches the ball is unbelievable. It was. It's something we talked about a lot. So that showed up early in the season anyway. He made a couple plays, maybe you were even early on, Arizona Cardinals. You know, he made a couple plays early in the season. Well, now he's starting to incorporate these other things that weren't really showing up necessarily in training camp, and he's developing, and I think he's getting better every week. I know he had the 125 yards last week. I can make an argument he played better in this game. The catch he made over top of Reek Woolen, of course, we know, right? He mossed him. We know that. That was incredible. For the Bills to go back to him two plays after that was broken up on a third down just speaks to how much they knew that he could make that play and how much they trust him. Then on top of that, he has the ability, again, to stay on his feet after yards after catch. We saw that yesterday. The blocking, right? The blocking. Right. I mean, driving the guy into the bench. Deion Dawkins called it the bench game afterwards. He said, yeah, I know, right? We refer to, like, the Tim Tyndale game. Right. He said he called it the bench game.
Right.
And he said he's going to be known as the bench game. And he said, you know, yeah, he got a penalty on it, but he told Keon, you stay there. That's exactly what you need to do all the time. Like, that just brings a certain mentality. And now, like, I think that just grows in confidence. But here's the biggest thing that I saw from him yesterday, talking about not showing up in the stat sheet. Do you remember the play that they tried a deep shot to him and there was a pass interference that was called?
Yes.
I don't know if you remember that.
Yes.
I happened to be focused on him on that play just because he was kind of on my side. And I looked and I noticed there was one-on-one coverage. And I thought, boy, I wonder if Josh might look his way. His release is what caused that. And isn't that the one thing that was really,
yes,
that everybody said he's got to work on? He's not very good. That release is what caused the corner to get tangled up and grabbed him. And that's why I say he's growing every week.
Yeah, I still don't have the exact quote, but I know Allen talked about him after the game. Everybody was talking about Keon Coleman after this game. Of course, the quarterback was going to be asked about him. And he said something to the effect of, when he knows what he should be doing, he's great at it, or he's really good at it, which had me thinking, like, I'm not being critical of Coleman by mm-hmm. bringing this up. I merely feel like it's encouraging that, to me, that sounded like Allen's telling you, he doesn't have everything mastered yet, so whatever we're feeding him, he's getting comfortable with it, and he's getting really good at it, and that makes me feel like there's more to come.
I agree. This is why I've never been in the camp of move him to the slot right now. I think there's got to be steps along the way, right? And if the more you give him, the less he can focus on being great at these, mastering these other things. And then when you get there, now you can move him into the slot. You can start giving him more, putting more on his plate. You can do things like that. He is getting to be a really, really good outside receiver for the Buffalo Bills. He's getting better every week. His quarterback, the thing you see now is Josh Allen, I think, implicitly trusts him. He's going to him in every situation. He's going to him when he's scrambling. He's going to him on fade balls. He's going to him just on slants. Even after he had the drop a couple of weeks ago, the one that hit him in the helmet, they ran the same play, caught that, right? I mean, like, Josh Allen trusting him is speaking volumes to his growth.
Yeah. That's a drop when it hits you in the helmet, in the back of the
helmet.
You
know what I mean,
It's a funny way to have it said. And, yeah, he almost had another long one that I think, was it Woolen in the coverage? Got a hand in there and broke it up. Could have even had a bigger day. A few minutes on Khalil Shakir, who I'm not surprised in the least. This guy, 36 out of 38. 38 targets, 36 receptions. Like, I know when, you know, the season began and we looked at, like, last year even, like a small sample size, like, boy, it'd be a lot to catch that many, like, that high a percentage of the passes that are thrown your way. Here we are, we're 8 games in, and he's at, like, 94%.
Bulldog, I am looking right now at the league leaders in catch percentage, right? So that is obviously number of times you catch the ball versus targets, right? And I'm scrolling down. I'm already to 23 until I get... There we go. So he's the number one guy in the whole league, okay? He's the number one guy of all the qualifiers. 94.7% catch rate. The next best wide receiver is Rashee Rice at 23rd in the league. Everybody else between 2 and 22 is a running back or tight end.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable. This just doesn't happen in the league. And he's got a quarterback who, you know, gets talked about being inaccurate sometimes, you know, and right. He needs guys that have catch radius. Khalil Shakir doesn't have a catch radius. Khalil Shakir just has hands, and Josh Allen puts it on him, and he catches the ball, and he is the prototypical perfect wide receiver for everything we talked about since March. Two high safeties, underneath, get the ball, let him work. That's exactly what he is. Now look, some of the catches are behind the line of scrimmage or at the line. They're very easy, and you know, you're making it easy on him, I should say, right? No doubt about that. But that's not all the work he's doing.
Right.
He's going over the middle. He's catching the ball outside, and he's catching the ball 5, 6, 7 yards downfield, and then he's getting the yards after catch. So, yeah, I mean, it's and by the way, he is top 25 in yards after catch as well, Khalil Shakir is. And that includes, again, running backs and tight ends. How many receivers are on this? Let me see. What receiver can I find? Let me do this real quick while I'm on with you. Oh, wow. Keon Coleman. If my numbers are right here, I'm looking at the NFL official stats. Unless I miss a name, it looks to me like Keon Coleman is the number one wide receiver in the league in yards after catch, average yards after catch right now at 8.57. Number two is Debo. Number three is Jaden Reed. Number four is Khalil Shakir. The Bills have two of the top four.
That's a long ways from being like 30th in that metric overall as a team, which is where they've
been living
since Allen made this breakthrough 4 seasons ago now. So, man, that is tremendous. All right. Do we have anything on the Barnes Firm injury report brought to you by the Barnes Firm injured? For help, call 1-800-8-MILLION.
Well, I know people saw and there was some, you know, chatter about, you know, I think Amari Cooper, you know, seemed like he might have gotten banged up a little bit yesterday, but he stayed in the game, never came out, and he played 50% of the snaps. That's good. So obviously just something to monitor this week. You never know, you know, after the game, things like that. I will tell you, though, there was no there was no official injury report on anyone during the game, which is awesome, right? I mean, like, I didn't have one sideline report that had an injury report involved. There was no blue tent. The blue tent never got up. It was a light work day for the blue tent. I wish it would have gone up. I would have gone in there to get away from the rain a few times. You know what I mean? I can't do that. But, you know, it was just a really fortunate day for the Bills to not only win 31-10, but to get out of there also with no major injuries. We did hear from Sean McDermott a little while ago. He also said they're still evaluating guys from yesterday. And you know, usually you have a few things that do pop up. He said, but with the late night and guys getting in, they'll have more information tomorrow. And that includes, by the way, Terrell Bernard and Curtis Samuel. Neither made the trip because McDermott said they were back here in Buffalo rehabbing, and he'll have more on their status as the week goes forward, specifically tomorrow and into Wednesday.
Excellent work, Sal. Thank you for this, and we'll catch up later in the week, man.
Oh, all right, you got it, man. Thanks.
World Series Game 3. How you must be feeling a little shook.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I know the situation. If the Yankees lose tonight, it's pretty much over, right? You're not going to come back. Yeah. I know it happened one time with your team, you know, the Red Sox, mm-hmm. but it's just not going to happen. You win tonight, I think it's live again. You never know. And I'm wondering about Shohei, the injury, right? How much does that impact him?
Right.
Apparently, he's going to play tonight. You know, we'll see about that. But you got to win tonight. That game one was just such a killer. It'd be so different tonight if they had closed out game one the way they should have. But, hey, they still have a chance. It's at New York, Yankee Stadium for a World Series. I've been there for a game. It is unbelievable, the atmosphere. So hopefully they can ride that to get a win and then, you know, see where it goes.
All right, Sal. Good luck. Thanks. And again, we'll talk probably on Wednesday next.
All right, you got it, man.
That's
Thanks.
Our man, Sal Capaccio, on the West Her Hotline. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? I know it's all the way back to Friday night, but holy cow, that Freddie Freeman moment was a moment. Exact same time as Kirk Gibson's home run from 88 in the World Series. 8:37 Pacific time. Same part of the ballpark. It was uncanny. Down by one, two outs. It was awesome. I was out Friday night, wasn't paying attention to sports at all. Walked in my house, the game was on, Freeman was at the plate. That's a pretty good arrival.
That's a real good arrival.
Oh, what's going on in the baseball game? Oh! Pretty good. I missed out on all the drama leading up to it, but still, pretty good. All right. I'm not just saying that because the Yankees lost. If Judge had hit a grand slam in the 10th inning to win the game, I definitely wouldn't be complimenting him. So it is because the Yankees lost. I got to admit it. Whatever, I'm petty. Sal's not listening anymore anyway. 803-0550 is the number. Vibes check on the Bills, man. You got to be. I feel great today. 6-2. The division is a train wreck behind them. And I just do not see a team that like they can't handle. I relish another shot at Baltimore. Give me another look at Baltimore. If they kick my teeth in again, fine. I'll have to live with it. I just don't. I think that's a one-off. I think the Bills are as good as anybody right now. That includes the Chiefs at 7-0. And I am feeling great about that. What about you? 803-0550 is the number. Mike Shope is off today along with Zach Jones. I am the Bulldog, and you're listening to WGR.
The Aaron Rodgers era is over. It's officially over with the New York Jets. This team is worse this year than with Zach Wilson last year playing the quarterback position. On defense, they can't stop you when they need stops. They're basic on offense, poorly coached. In the run game, they don't even know the guys they have to block. And Aaron Rodgers is just a shell of himself. They're just a roster. They're not a team. They're a bunch of hired mercenaries out there that have popular names on the back of their jersey, but they don't play as a team.
That is ESPN's Damian Woody going in on the Jets. I'm 100% here for that. Love it. I saw a note from Bill Barnwell earlier today that since firing Robert Saleh, the Jets' defense has the worst expected points per play against in the league. Like, the defense was their thing. The defense coordinator got elevated to head coach when Saleh got fired. They've lost every game since, and their defense which was, I still think, supposed to carry them. The theory was, like, that the D's so good, all Rodgers needs to do is be, like, in the middle of the pack amongst quarterbacks, and everything will fall into place. 2-6. Delicious is what that is. That is delicious. Helping pave the way for the Bills. Cruising here in the AFC East. They are 6-2. The Jets are 2-6. The Dolphins, who come in here on Sunday, 2-5. They've already had their bye. I would think we're going to hear a lot about who wants it more and that sort of stuff this week as we head for Sunday at 1 o'clock when the Dolphins, Tua's back. They lost at home yesterday afternoon to Arizona. The offense, though, showed some signs of life. Certainly, they were pissed, lost without Tua. A lot of teams would be lost without their starting quarterbacks, but there's also plenty of coordinators who at least can, like, move the ball and get the ball to their star players. The Dolphins haven't been able to do really anything with any of those dudes without Tua. So we'll see what kind of form they're in by the time they get here. But that's Sunday. Today's just Monday. We're enjoying a football Monday here on WGR, brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. 803-0550 is the number. Dan is first up this segment. Hi, Dan. Thanks for calling. You're on the air here on WGR.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you? Bills are doing fantastic. I'm so happy, very optimistic.
Good.
I do have a question for both of you, and I'm concerned about the kicking game and Tyler Bass. You know, as you both know, that once the playoffs start, we're not going to get into many of these barn burners, and it's going to probably be down to field goal kick. I'm just concerned what's going to happen once the playoffs roll around and his mentality, and, you know, what are some other options we can consider?
Oof. Thanks for the call, Dan. I want to see if Mike wants to comment. I'm just kidding. You don't need to rot. You don't need to. I'm here by myself today. Although Zach is here, but he hasn't talked a lot because I've been just running my mouth. And I'm just kidding with you. Options. I mean, I don't know. They signed a guy to the practice squad, so they've got an insurance policy. They tried out a number of kickers and settled on this dude that's on the practice squad now. So that's the first guy up. I mean, once you start down that path, it happens in the league. Every year it's happening this year in the league. Teams that just don't feel like they have it start looking for someone else. And, you know, next thing you know, you're on to, like, your third kicker of the year. So, I mean, you can get really in the weeds pretty fast. So, I mean, I hear you. None of that is to dissuade you from being concerned about Tyler Bass and his ability to make a big kick come playoff time. I mean, he missed a game-tying field goal very late in the playoff loss last year, and this summer was rocky. The season's been a little rough. He's made quite a few in a row now. Maybe he's through it. I don't know. I'm going to hope that he is. But really, like, at this point with him, it's far from feeling automatic. Like, any kick, you're just going to be kind of, okay, I sure hope this goes well. And I don't know, maybe a lot of teams fans are like that with their guy, but I don't think we used to feel that, that way with Bass. And so I think he's got some work to do to sort of reprove himself to the fan base, I think. As I said, the organization was alarmed enough that they went out and brought a guy in to put on the practice squad. So they've got insurance here if they feel like they need it. He's made every kick since that happened. So I think really until we get to the moment where it's a big game-winning kick, I mean, he did kick the game-winning kick against the Jets. It wasn't a super long one, but he made it. Until we get to that point, I don't know. Like, once you're uncomfortable with your kicker, I think you remain uncomfortable with your kicker until he talks at a parade. I really, like, so, like, you can worry all you want about it. I wouldn't describe myself as unconcerned about it, but I mean, I'm also not going to lose sleep over the potential of a guy missing a kick in January. You know, we'll get there and we'll see, but it certainly bears watching. Their concern about it tells you all you need to know. I mean, we've been talking about it for the whole summer. It took them until a couple of weeks ago to act and get someone to back them up here in case they feel like they need it after a particularly rough outing or whatever. So they've already got a guy that's here and they're going to go scrambling around. So that tells you that they're at least on notice about it. No question about that. As they should be. So I don't know. Did I really give you an answer? I mean, my answer is, yeah, I'm concerned too. He's missed some kicks. I mean, anytime that happens, you're going to be worried about your kicker. So I feel you on that. Thanks for the call. Rob is up next. Hi, Rob. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Bulldog. How you doing today? Man, I have to – I'm applauding you. You know, first off, yesterday I was thinking about you when I saw the score with the New England Patriots and the Jets game. I said, boy, I wish I was sitting next to Bulldog right now. You know, I'm in the same boat with you as far as how I feel about the Jets and that whole organization. And I'm also applauding you for the beginning of this show, the first segment, when you were talking about how you feel about the Bills and how you felt at the beginning of the season, how you feel now. I completely identified with how you felt because I was saying to myself in the beginning of the season, this is going to be one hell of a roller coaster ride. But now it feels like, for me, it's like, leave no doubts, because there's only one team that I feel that's standing in our way as far as, you know, the rest of the season. It's Detroit. That's the game that I don't think we're going to get past, but we're going to make it to the playoffs. We're going to be all right. I'm very comfortable with what we have as an organization. It's just, it's beautiful. And you put it in so many words in that first segment. It was awesome. You did a great job on the radio today. You killed it. So it's always a pleasure. You know, I listen to this radio station every single day, morning to you guys. So thank you. And let's go Bills.
All right, Rob. Thank you. Go Bills. Right back at you. A lot of flattery there, and I appreciate it. I feel a little embarrassed, actually. I also wish I was sitting next to you when that Jet result happened, because that would have meant that I was out enjoying the game somewhere, and that would have been really super fun. Not that sitting alone in my house and then doing the postgame show isn't fun. But really, thank you. I appreciate all of that. Really nice of you to say. I do feel great. Detroit looks like, I mean, that's intimidating. that team. What did they score yesterday? Did they get to 50? Goff threw for 89 yards or something?
Yep.
It was all like returns and stuff. I mean, they got a lot of ways to do it. Their two running backs look fantastic. Their passing game is great. They look tough. They look really tough.
Yeah, 52-14, Goff, 12 of 15, 85 yards, 3 touchdowns.
That is amazing.
They are a wagon.
The big thing with them is when do they miss Aiden Hutchinson? Because that's obviously a massive, that is one of the best defensive players in the league. So him being down is tough. But other than that, I agree, man. They look tough. The AFC, I mean, give me another shot at Baltimore. That's where I'm at. Give me another shot at them. I know they trampled them when they played. I don't think there's anybody that's out of the Bills league. In the AFC anyway, and that includes fancy 7-0 Kansas City and Josh Uche and whatever. Have at it. All right. Chiefs are here in a couple of weeks. They've got Tampa at home on Monday night next week. So we'll see if they can finally get their first loss before they come to visit the Bills in a couple of weeks' time. We'll hit a timeout here. 803-0550 is the number. We are ramping toward Sabres pregame, which comes at the top of the hour when Paul Hamilton shows up and ruins everything. So do stay tuned for that. Mike is out sick today along with Zach Jones. I'm the Bulldog, and this is WGR. All right. Good to have you along for the ride here on a Football Monday, brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. Here's a little something from our old buddy Marcel Louis Jacques. covered the Bills for a couple of years here for ESPN, is doing the same gig in Miami now, covering the Dolphins. And here are some numbers for you, and we can start to familiarize ourselves with these. Teams that have started a season 2-5. It has happened 248 times in the Super Bowl era. 16 of those teams finished with a winning record. 11 made the playoffs. 5 of them won a playoff game. 3 finished with double-digit wins. It's a hole. 2-5 is a hole. It's not insurmountable. It's not lost on me that the Bills trailed Miami by 3 games last season with 5 to go and caught them. So it's more than that right now. I mean, the Bills have 4 more wins. Dolphins have played 1 fewer game, so they only have the 5 losses. So it's not a mirror image inverted like it is with New England and the Jets at 2-6 while the Bills are 6-2. But they're in tough. But stuff happens. So, look, I know how it feels. It feels great. I feel great. I'm just telling you that's the situation Miami finds themselves in. It's you know, it's happened, but I don't know how likely you should think it is. Obviously, all of that takes another hit should they drop another game on Sunday, especially to the Bills, and be swept by them and drop to 2-6. We'll see. That comes on Sunday, and again, going to be a lot of talk about Miami trying to save their season. They've got Tua back now. He'll play his second straight game here, rolling in to play the Bills in Orchard Park on Sunday. So we'll see if they can get off the mat here. The Jets are even in worse shape, and man, that is delicious. I mean, I as thrilled as I am with the Bills' good fortune to be off to this 6-2 start, I can't say I'm taking as much pleasure in the Jets spiraling to 2-6 like they are, but it's close. It is close. I love seeing the Jets. Go be Jetsy Jets. The Jetsy Jets. It's the Jetsiest the Jets can ever Jets is what we've got going on here with Aaron Rodgers this year in New York. All right, enough football for the day. We got a hockey game to get you ready for starting here after a quick timeout. Paul Hamilton will join from KeyBank Center. We'll hear from Lindy Ruff, Nicholas Aube-Kubel, as well as defenseman Connor Clifton. Sabres and Florida Panthers tonight from downtown Buffalo. We'll get you ready for that right after this on WGR.